it's exciting.
Thank you all for coming. I'm going to be a little more informal than I had planned since there's so few of you. I don't feel a little silly being very formal. As Rebecca mentioned, how do I...
You click on the... Oh, this is different from what I was doing.
Maybe.
This is better. Okay.
And then will that go backwards? Okay. As Rebecca mentioned, my name's Jessie Clyde, and I'm presenting today for two colleagues. Shelley Makeliff, who's in the evaluation department at IPPF, and River Finley, who is a colleague of mine on the youth team, and we don't have any relationships to disclose. Okay. Today, I'm going to share the experience that we've had implementing our sexual diversity initiative in Latin America. Specifically, I'm going to focus on how a tool that we use to survey staff on attitudes, knowledge, and practices around sexual diversity actually ended up serving as a tool for sensitization in and of itself. But before I launch into a description of the project, I want to briefly explain a little bit about IPPF, just so you have a bit of context for the project. International Planned Parenthood Federation started about 50 years ago, primarily as a family planning organization, but we've really transitioned over the years to be more of a rights-based organization focusing on providing sexual and reproductive health services and information to everybody and ensuring that they have the tools to act on that information. And more recently, as a regional office, we've started to focus more on the experience of our clients when accessing services at our member associations in Latin America. Again, we work in 41 countries throughout the Latin American and Caribbean, and it ranges from there being one small clinic in Costa Rica to Mexico having, many, many more. So it sort of varies, but we're across the map. And anyway, so as we started to look more closely, we realized that probably our clinics were not serving all clients. And as sort of a first step in addressing that at a regional office level, we ensured that our strategic plan actually spelled out that we were committed to, for example, serving sexually diverse populations. And we also more recently, like days ago, came out with a declaration on sexual rights, which really for the first time sort of emphasizes the importance of sexual rights being different and equally important to reproductive rights. So, okay. And we see our work on sexual diversity as being a natural commitment to both sexual and reproductive rights. But actually, before I continue, I want to quickly explain why we chose sexual diversity. We felt, especially as a service provision organization, that this definition sort of best encompassed everything. So it encompasses heterosexual individuals, sex workers, gay, lesbian, everything. And it really sort of speaks to our commitment to providing quality services. But that was there's much conversation around that, both in the field and in our office, as you can imagine. Okay, and as in terms of our objectives, we have two. There's the regional office objective, which is to build capacity to institutionalize sexual diversity work in the region and support MA efforts. And then at a country level, to address the needs of sexually diverse populations with a focus on increased access to SRH services and relevant education and information. To give you sort of an idea of where we're working, these are the associations that have sexual diversity initiatives. All of them are working on service promotion and training and sensitization of staff, but from there's a little bit of variety. Some are focused more on creating IEC materials, others on sort of advocacy and partnership, and still others on actually creating physical centers like youth centers for GLBTQ youth. And this year we're going to be expanding into the Caribbean, which we foresee as being extremely challenging, but we're up for it. I'm excited. Okay. So while I would love to continue talking about what each country is doing, because sort of the the meat of the project. Today I'm going to focus more on the sexual diversity toolkit that we've developed, and specifically on the survey for staff that we use sort of to kick off each project. And I'm going to end up calling it a CAP by accident throughout the presentation, but it's a survey, not a CAP. let's see. So just briefly, some of the other components of the toolkit are an indicator guide, which has sort of some indicators that we find useful in evaluating our sexual diversity projects, as well as an agency readiness index, which one of our member associations in Mexico adapted from actually a national network for youth tool. And I have postcards with me with more information on it, and as well as the link to download it. It's on our site. Okay. So moving on to the survey. As I mentioned, we sort of identified that that our MAs were not meeting the needs of all clients, but we didn't really know to what extent. We knew that they really sort of assumed that most clients were heterosexual. We knew that the way they took sexual history, for example, always assumed that the partner was of the opposite sex. All the materials and posters always depicted straight couples. But we didn't really know exactly to what degree and how that was reflected in service provision. So this tool helped us to get that. And it has various components, the survey itself, the implementation guide, which explains sort of how to implement the survey, answer key, code book, and then the actual database. And coming soon will be the analysis plan, which we're hoping will really be sort of a capacity building tool, because the organizations will be able to analyze the data themselves. Okay, so in terms of what the survey looks like, there are questions about attitudes. For example, is having a gay pride day silly because being gay is nothing to be proud of? Comfort interacting with LGBT people, sharing office space, for example. And then sort of for service providers, questions about providing services to LGBT clients, blood samples, stuff like that. And then questions around intended practice. For example, do they ask sexual orientation? Are they more likely to give HIV testing to gay men than straight men? That sort of thing. And then finally, a level of preparation. How prepared do you feel to counsel, provide services, or refer? Okay. As I mentioned, the purpose was really to inform sensitization and training contents for the member associations, but it's also designed to be able to measure change over time. We haven't gotten there yet because these projects are relatively new. In terms of implementation, the survey was implemented for all staff, so administrative assistants, board members, janitorial staff, HR, the full range. And it is because of that we had sort of our unanticipated outcome, which is that comments from participants revealed that the survey itself ended up being an intervention. There was a sort of an open-ended question at the end of the survey, and overwhelmingly the response was, wow, this really got our office talking about this. It really provoked dialogue, it provoked discussion, and it seemed that that was sort of what impacted people more than actually using it as sort of an evaluation tool or a tool to sort of assess knowledge, attitudes, and practices. Okay. In terms of results, they obviously vary dramatically across the region. For example, in Chile, our member association had really had a lot more exposure, and their knowledge was much, much, much higher than Paraguay, where I think there, in the entire country, I believe there are three GLBTQ groups, so knowledge was a little lower, which demonstrated the need for really tailored training and sensitization that was not a sort of one training, one sensitization fits all across the region. It was really great because we had our member associations in Mexico and Peru, who initiated the project earlier, were actually able to provide the trainings for our member associations in Venezuela and Paraguay. So it's a real a south-to-south model there. One of our surprising findings, or actually disappointing findings, was that providers didn't always have a more accepting attitude than other staff, and we had hoped, since they were the ones having the most interaction with the clients, that would be true, but it was not. And then finally, there was incredible confusion around the difference between sexual orientation and sexual behavior and sort of the different names. And it was funny, when I was in Paraguay, the fear of using the wrong word, like saying transgender instead of transsexual or something, it was almost prohibitive to talking about it, because there was this fear among staff of offending somebody or sounding ignorant. And you know, sort of that's why we included the glossary and the toolkit, because that was sort of really the first step, just you know, basic definitions. Okay, limitations. Anonymity, I stumbled over that word. For respondents, we needed to do the entering the data and analyzing the data off-site. There was obviously a lot of fear that this was going to be used to assess their performance, and so we really had to take extra measures for it to be anonymous. Social desirability bias, especially in countries where they're more familiar with some of this work. And it sort of prompted an interesting conversation at the regional office of, well, if they're capable of sort of masking their stigmatizing attitudes and providing a good service, sort of, is that enough, at least in terms of IPPF's mission? Not answered. We didn't come to a conclusion on that. There are some, obviously it's hard to measure topics. We were talking earlier about how once member associations are providing services, it's hard to assess whether or not they actually have improved. Sort of, you can't do sort of an exit survey with gay male clients. It doesn't really work like some of our other traditional tools do. Also, we're not a research organization, so that's going to sort of be a limitation to any evaluation we do. However, despite sort of our main point on this is that despite limitations on this tool, truly getting at attitudes, practices, and knowledge, it truly was effective as an intervention in and of itself in beginning the sensitization process. Okay. In conclusion, we felt that tools, specifically this one, can really be used to give an organization an understanding of staff attitudes, comfort, and preparation for working with sexually diverse populations. It can promote systemic work to move people along the spectrum of acceptance, which sounds very jargony, but I think you get my meaning. And finally, to contribute to the goal of creating service provision setting with a high quality, non-judgmental services for all. Thank you. I think we're getting questions.
Thank you, Jesse.